Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Westwood for another edition of UCLA Bruin Talk. With Allison Taylor, I'm Dave Marcus, and we thank you for joining us. UCLA, a powerhouse in Olympic sports. That's how the school got more NCAA championships than anyone else. And we're going to visit with a couple of the very good programs on campus in just a moment.
Before we meet our first guest, let's take a look at the upcoming events.
UCLA Water Polo has always been a program the Bruins have been proud of, and now playing in the beautiful Speaker Aquatic Center, they're off to another great start. The men are 10-2 on the young season, coming off a win over USC, first one since 2009, a 7-6 thriller. And two of the guys that are so key for men's water polo join us today, Chris Wendt, utility player, and goalkeeper Matthew Rapaz. Welcome to Bruin Talk. Matt, how did it feel to beat SC?
I felt amazing. It's been a long time since you beat them. It's been since, like you said, 2009, and to finally win over them, it's incredible. You know, it's just what we needed to get into the season.
Now, you're in the cage, and you're a man who's on the spot when you play a team like that. What's going through your mind as the final seconds are ticking down?
Don't let the ball in the cage, basically. You know, just make sure that I get the stop and we get the win.
Chris, you have wins over Cal this year, always a powerhouse, SC this year. The MPSF is going to be another battle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always a tough season when you have the top four teams in the nation in your conference. So every conference game this year is going to be really important, especially this one on Friday against Cal.
The team has always been successful, has always been ranked high. Can you tell us what you guys need to do this year to put you over that edge to get to that NCAA title?
We got to work harder than, you know, last year. We tried our best, but, you know, we came a little short. But this year, we're going to definitely apply what we need to apply, and we need to focus more. I feel like we need to be mentally more prepared. And when it comes to the games, you know, we're going to do what needs to be done to get the victory.
I feel like this year we brought in some new players. We're gelling really well this year, and we've all bought into Adam's system. I think Adam's a great coach, and I really think that's going to take us far.
One of the keys in water polo is taking advantage on the 6-on-5, getting those exclusions, getting the man advantage. Games are so often one-goal games. What's the key to drawing those exclusions?
We have really good center play. We have three centers with Imone Barabino, Brett Hayes, and Lucas Reynolds. They've been playing pretty well this year. So every time we can get the ball to them, we're either trying to get a goal or an exclusion, and it's going pretty well.
How about on the defensive end? What's the key to staying out of trouble?
The defensive end, I'm trying to stay away from most of the centers and try to stay out of ejection trouble because our five-man team's really good, but if we don't have to play it, we'd rather not.
Matthew, I had a chance to do the play-by-play of your match against Pepperdine, and they couldn't get the ball into the two-meter. They were reduced to really shooting from outside. As the goalkeeper, do you hedge a little bit toward the outside shooters when you know your two-meter defenders are doing such a great job?
Yeah, of course. Like when Chris is guarding, you know, we're talking to each other, making sure everything's okay. And when I know that the shot is going to be from the outside, it's less pressure on me, and I can focus on where the shot's coming from rather than focus on the two-meter man and also the shot outside.
Do guys try to look you off like a quarterback looking off a receiver and then coming back? Do they try to fake you out with their eyes?
Yeah, actually, a lot of them. You can take a no-look pass or no-look shot, and sometimes the cut catch you off guard, but as long as you keep your eye on the ball, everything should be okay.
What made you get in the cage in the first place? Not a lot of people want to stand there voluntarily and get balls flung at their face.
Yeah. Tell you the truth, in high school, I was a tall, lanky kid, and my coach threw me in there. So it kind of just took off from there, and I loved it ever since.
Water polo is a sport that a lot of people don't really understand, and I know that there's a lot of stuff that goes on under the water that spectators can't see. Can you guys explain to us and our viewers a little bit more about how the game actually works?
Well, there's a lot of the game's all about your body positioning, and you want to stay mostly horizontal in the water, because if you get your legs vertical, people can be grabbing you and punching you. So there's a lot of where your hips are is really important. So if you can keep your hips close to the surface, you're not going to get grabbed as much, and it's a cleaner game when it's like that.
Goalkeeper, of course, you need to get out of the water. You need to elevate. Right. What's the key for you positioning? Do you want your body to be more upright?
For me, it's more of my hips. It's kind of like I'm sitting in a chair, basically. My legs are underneath me, keeping a good steady egg beater, and then throw a breaststroke kick in there every once in a while. But basically, it's just a nice steady egg beater, and making sure when people are faking on me, I don't lose my legs, and I'm just at a flutter kicking the whole time. So it's a good steady base for me.
Now, you talk about an egg beater. What are you doing to keep your body upright and not sinking in the water?
Basically, I move my legs like as if you're cooking cookies, you know, using an egg beater, just, you know, one circular motion after another, just keeping yourself going.
How long can you do that with your hands out of the water?
I never timed myself. probably a while. Yeah.
What's more difficult, guys, your team workouts or when you play other teams?
I'd say our team workouts. Yeah. Adam pushes us so hard every practice, especially in the mornings we do all conditioning, and then the afternoons we have to come back being tired, and then usually play in the afternoon. And I think it's good that our practices are harder because it prepares us for anything when we're ready for the games.
The team recently finished up tournaments both up in Northern California and here in Southern California, and I know a lot of those tournaments have several games in them. How do you guys use your downtime to rest? What are the guys doing to prepare in between matches?
Well, a lot of times we go back to the hotel, we get back in our bed, sleep it off a little bit, figure out the game, what happened, if we won or lost, and get mentally ready for the next game, you know, just prepare ourselves, don't stay off our feet, and get ready for the go.
Yeah, I think it was really tough this past weekend. We lost our semifinal game to Cal, and we had to come back an hour and a half later and start warming up for our SC game. So a lot of guys just laid down, put some headphones in, relaxed, tried to forget about the last game and prepare for the next game, and we were able to do it, so it turned out well.
Goalkeeper probably plays shots over in your mind over and over and over and over again. You don't like to think about losing, but how long does it take you to shake off a loss?
I mean, of course, if a shot goes in, you know, it's going to play a big role, in the next game. But, you know, as long as you see what you did wrong and you can fix it in the next game and they won't do it again, it's okay that it happened because you learn from your mistakes.
Chris, everybody who plays water polo is good swimmers. You've got some great swimmers in your family. Tell us about some of your family background.
Actually, my whole family swam since I was really young and played water polo. I had a cousin that actually went to SC and played water polo, so there's a good family rivalry around the holiday season. But, yeah, my dad swam, all my sisters swim, and it's been a big family tradition.
When did you learn that you were going to be a water polo player, not just a swimmer? When did that appeal to you?
I was pretty young. I actually started playing water polo before I started swimming, which is reverse for most people. But my dad played, and he got me into it when I was really little. And so I've always loved it, and so I'm really glad it took me out here to play water polo.
Opponents are sometimes stronger offensively, and other teams are stronger defensively. What does Coach Wright employ in his strategies that he says to you guys about how to play the game?
I'd say we're a defense-first team. We're always working on our defense, every aspect of it, when we're down a man, when we're even. And our defense transitions into our offense. And when we're playing offense, we're thinking about defense. And so I think our offense will work itself out. We've got a really high-powered offense. And as long as we can nail down our defense, I think we'll be in every game.
Matthew, we talked about the Speaker Aquatic Center, the beautiful facility at UCLA. This year, you get to host the MPSF tournament. What kind of advantage is that playing in familiar surroundings?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, with your home crowd, the energy's always higher. You always feel more comfortable in your own pool, and you're in your backyard, you know. Nothing really on your back as far as stress, anything like that. Of course, you're eager to play and everything, but with your home crowd cheering you on the whole time, it makes it a lot easier to play each game.
You've got to be really focused on what's happening in the water, but the crowd does play an impact. You do hear them up there?
Oh, yeah, of course you hear, you know, your friends or your family members, you know, screaming a little louder than the rest, or the whole group together, you know, doing the 8-clap, and it always... If a goal gets scored on me or our team's feeling a little low, it always boosts morale up again and ready to go.
Chris, Chris, I know one of the things that's most attracting to me when I announce your matches is the barbecue smoke from the Speaker Aquatic Center. Do you guys ever smell that in the pool and can't wait till you get done?
Yeah, sometimes then and then during practice we can smell it coming over from sunset. And it's always like, man, like I'm hungry. Like, you got to get out of here. But, yeah, during the game, the parents are always great. They always have food for us after. And it's motivation.
Despite both of you having redshirted, you've both been a part now of the team for 2 years. Can you tell us what each one of your individual goals is for this season and what kind of challenges you both face?
I think getting better each game as a team and individually is really important. And at the end of the year, hopefully winning a national championship. I don't think there's any other goal besides that.
Yeah, I have to agree with Chris. I mean, of course, we want to win a national championship. But, I mean, from here on out, win every game, take care of business. And as far as challenges go, I mean, just to be the best we possibly can be, you know, making sure that another team comes in our house and beats us in our own pool, and we go on the road, take care of business, and beat MBSF, and we win, and say, well, it's.
You've got a couple of months left in your season. Summertime, you did a lot of conditioning work, I'm sure. Is there a point where you begin to taper down the conditioning and work more on technique and having energy for the end of the year?
Yeah, we actually go through, right now we're playing a stretch where we have a bunch of big games in a row, and then we have about a two-week break where we're going to get, it's going to be really tough training. And then after that, we have a few more big games. That's when we start to taper down before the end of the year, before our conference tournament and before our NCAAs.
We mentioned the great start, 10-2. How do you see this team progressing? Where have you grown this year? What's the strongest improvement the team has made?
Well, actually, this past weekend, you know, we placed third. We lost to Cal in the semifinals, and then we beat SC in the finals. And years prior, it's hard for us to bounce back like we did. But this year we bounced back and we played a really tough game and we're a totally different team. So as far as comparing past years to this year, we're a different team as far as we're mentally stronger, we're more prepared, and when it comes to the games, we come more ready to go. In the past, we've been a little sluggish maybe, not fully mentally there, and not ready to bounce back like we did the past weekend.
Chris, you get SC at home this year. It's a Friday night match, November 18th. Let me ask you first about the difference between playing at night and playing in the daytime. Is it a difference as a player playing under the lights?
I think it's great playing under the lights. You get the atmosphere, you get the crowd. You get really just pumped up being there. And you don't have to deal with the sun being in the goalie's eyes or in the player's eyes. So I think it's wonderful playing under the lights, especially at Speaker. You couldn't ask for a better place.
Now, you've already had SC twice. You lost 10-8 the first time. You won 7-6 the second time. You get him again at home. You're probably going to get him in the MPSF tournament. Do things go on in the early games that may play a part later in the season?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of scouting. I mean, we have film from both their games, and we study it so closely, and we have to get the tendencies of every player on their team, and we each see the players that we're going to guard during their game. So by the time it's the last game, it's just whoever wants it more, and I think we want it the most.
You guys are ranked number 2. Does the ranking have an effect psychologically on the team, or does it affect how you prepare for games?
I mean, as far as the ranking goes, like, our coach always tells us, like, it's just a number. Don't worry about it, you know, because each game, it's really anybody's game. It's whoever plays better, puts more balls back in the cage. So rankings, I mean, yeah, it's nice to know you're number 2, but of course we'll be number 1, but it's just a number. It's not what we want. We want to win the national championship.
Chris, from your standpoint as a player out in the field, what is the key to UCLA's success as the season goes on?
I think our key is our defense. If teams can't score on us, then we can score one goal and win a game. So if we can lock down our defense and have good goalie play, I think we'll be able to be with every team.
Well, the Bruins are on their way. They're having a great season, and you can see them at the Speaker Aquatic Center. And if you can't make it out to that November 18th match against USC, we'll have the play-by-play for you live on UCLABruins.com. Chris Wendt, Matthew Rapaz, thanks for joining us, and best wishes toward a successful finish to the season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back with more UCLA Bruin Talk right after these public service announcements.
A trophy can be made just about anywhere. But there's one place where champions are made. UCLA, champions meet here.
Welcome back to Bruin Talk. It is now time to honor our Student Athlete of the Week. This week, we honor Andy Rose of the men's soccer team as our Student Athlete of the Week. In a tough matchup versus Pac-12 rival Cal, Andy scored the game-winning goal in the first minute of overtime to give the Bruins the 1-0 victory. 2 days later, Andy again put the ball in the back of the net in a 2-0 win over Stanford. We look forward to watching more great play from the senior and captain. Congratulations, Andy, and good luck to the rest of the team with the remainder of the season. If you would like additional information about UCLA athletics, please visit our website at uclabruins.com.
No matter where you are or what time you're watching this show, there's probably a UCLA cross-country runner out somewhere doing a workout. They have a great work ethic, and that's going to pay off in great results. And we're very pleased to welcome the coach of UCLA Cross Country, Forrest Braden, back to UCLA Bruin Talk. Thanks for rejoining us.
Thanks for having me.
Third year at UCLA. Does it seem like it's gone fast?
Oh, it's flown by. I was actually just commenting the other day, just walking around campus, and it feels like I belong here, and I've been here for a couple of years now. But at the same time, it's still a little bit surreal at times. It's a great place to be, and it's a great place to work.
Tell us about this year's cross-country teams. You coach the men and the women, and they're right in the middle of their season.
Yeah, we've had three big meets so far. Off to a good start. The team chemistry, the dynamic is really, really good on both the men and the women. We just got back from the Notre Dame invite and had a good showing out there, and been traveling around a lot, and you know, right in the heart of our season, ready to finish it up and head to the postseason here in a month.
You mentioned that the team has had a successful start to the season. What factors can you attribute to the team's early season success?
I think work ethic, right from right when track season ended. Once June got going, it was just June, July, August, putting in the work, putting in the base, putting in the miles, and then coming into camp, ready to go, fired up. Everyone's just excited about the potential for this year. And the leadership now from the older guys and the older girls has risen this year, and everyone's very confident and ready to go.
See, Forrest, you missed your chance. You could have said great coaching.
Oh, yeah. And great coaching.
Okay. You talked about camp. You do an unusual camp, 12 days at high altitude. Tell us about the conditioning work you do.
Yeah, we head up to Mammoth Lakes, 12 days of two runs a day. We'll go hit the trails up there. It's great running. We sleep at about 8,000 feet. We get up to about 9,500 at some points, which is pretty high. It makes it difficult to adjust the first 3-4 days. It's just easy running, acclimating. And then we start doing some specific training. We'll head down to a little bit lower altitude, 4,000, 5,000 feet, and get in some hard interval training, some harder tempo efforts. And it's just a great bonding experience, too. You're up there with your teammates for 12 days, getting to know each other. The freshmen coming in don't really know anyone, so it's nice to get them in there and really start building the team chemistry.
Most spectators of track and field don't really realize how many miles cross-country athletes actually put in, but you can't train too much. So can you tell us a little bit about how you monitor the girls and the guys training to ensure that they stay healthy?
Right. I mean, that's a big part of it. You're going to be putting a lot of miles on your body, on your legs. You can't train for 6 hours a day, and you know you can't go 50 miles a day. Most people can't, and remain healthy. So, you know, it's specific training. It's making sure that if you're a high school athlete coming in and you're running 30 miles a week, we don't bump you up to 70 miles a week right off the bat. It's a slow progression, and I'll give them the workouts each day, knowing that there's some people that can handle more mileage, can get up to 100-mile weeks, and there's some young men and women who are about 50 or 60, and it's just every athlete is different depending on where they came from, how their body can hold up. Every athlete is individually trained in some capacity. We also utilize the training room, the equipment in the training room, the Alter-G treadmill, the pool. We do cross-training for those athletes who can't necessarily run all the miles. We'll supplement that with some cross training, bike, and pool activities.
How long does it take you as a coach to begin to assess what the training capabilities of your athletes are?
Right, it's a process getting to know each individual athlete, and that's why the longer you're in a program, the longer you're with a coach, the better the relationship becomes. The better I know the athlete knows my style of training. Sometimes it's that first year. The freshman year is a big learning experience, and it's just getting to know that athlete. Sometimes it's a little quicker, and each athlete develops at a little bit different rate. Usually that first year of getting to know an athlete is very important. Just watching what they respond to, not only training wise, but just mentally mentally as well as physically.
Forrest, you've got a very interesting blog on the UCLA website, Off the Beaten Path, appropriate for a cross-country coach. And you talked about a couple of super seniors. You got Kent Morikawa and Dylan Knight. Tell us about
our super seniors. Kent and Dylan are two of our fifth years. Dylan's twin brother, Spencer, also a fifth-year senior. They're both very motivated young men. They're both leaders in their own right. Dylan kind of last year started off the season really as our go-to guy. He started off the season on fire. He was leading the team. Had a little bit of an intestinal infection that actually took him out for the last half of the season. And at that point, Kent Morikawa really started to step up, and he then asserted himself as leader of the team and had a great finish to the season. And now with both of those guys back, it's a pretty dynamic 1-2 punch.
What convinced you to go into coaching, and why coach at UCLA?
Why not coach at UCLA? coaching is, it's just, I mean, I know I always wanted to be a part of the sport for as long as I possibly could, love the sport. There's something about, you know, coaching an athlete to success that's in many ways much more fulfilling than actually having success yourself. It's nice to be a part of that and just to see the progression, see the growth of each athlete. And so I think just being able to watch an athlete develop and kind of, you know, be that stage coach for the athlete from one place from a freshman to a senior or a fifth year senior, it's a really fulfilling progression. It's a fulfilling thing to be a part of.
You've spoken about the biggest strength of your team this year being parity. That number 1 through 10, your athletes are going to be out there competing. How important is the team chemistry in cross-country, where they're all running at the same time, as opposed to track, where they might be running individual events?
Right, it's definitely a different chemistry. It's very important. When you run as a team, you're going to feed off each other. You're going to gain confidence by having your teammates right in front of you, right in back of you. You've trained with those guys and girls every single day, and there's something about having a teammate with you. You know you're not going against them. You know you're not competing against them, and you just feel that energy. You and your teammate, or you and your two teammates, three teammates, can roll together and pick off everyone else and really work together in a race. So it's a very important aspect. There's nothing like stepping to the line with those other six guys around you and knowing that they're going to give everything they have, and you know you're going to give everything that you have to finish successfully and to have a successful race.
We were talking a little bit before this show about the difference between European cross country and American cross country. Can you elaborate a little bit?
American cross country, usually on golf course, especially at the collegiate level, on golf courses, flat, fast, minimal hills. For the most part, there's some courses that deviate a little bit from that. But European cross country is usually muddy. You might be jumping over hay bales, uphills, downhills. More extreme conditions for European cross country.
Over the river and through the woods.
Exactly.
Well, it's good for spectators in the American cross country. You can come out and actually see them.
Oh, yeah, and you can. It's a great spectator sport because it's really one of the only sport that I can think of when the spectators actually get a workout as well as the athletes, running from one point to the other to the other. You got to be in pretty good shape to watch a cross-country race.
Well, I'll have to follow it on the website in that case. As you look forward to the end of the season, as you're coming up to it, how has your team grown during the season? What needs to be done to get to the top?
Oh, I mean, we definitely have a ways to go. We're at a good place right now. The women are a young team, a complete new top seven from last year. We've got a good freshman class, but a freshman class that needs to get in some big races and really just experience collegiate cross country as opposed to the high school sport. So they just need to grow. The women just need to get in there and get in more races, get in bigger races, start believing in themselves, get their confidence up. The men are dialed in right now. They're ready to go. One of the top programs in the West, and now it's just about becoming more disciplined than any other team in the country and working harder than any other team in the country to now take that next step.
Coach, you stated that from failing, you learn something about yourself. How do you implore that philosophy into your coaching style?
You got to take a chance. When you're racing, you got to take a chance. You can't just always sit back and just conserve all your energy and then kick at the end so you finish hard. Sometimes you got to see how good you can be, and you got to run with the front runners. You got to take a chance. You got to go for it. And you're going to fail sometimes. Everyone's going to fail, but it's learning from those failures and learning from your mistakes that's going to make you better. Failure is part of excellence. You have to fail to then get better and achieve excellence. So I understand that the athletes are not going to always run well and they're not always going to have their best race, but you just have to realize that and you have to learn from that experience.
Now coaching, you're not out there in the race, but what's your feeling before the race starts and what do you do while the race is in progress?
It's a different feeling than when you're racing. When you're racing, you step to the line, and when the gun goes off, boom, the nerves, everything is gone. Now it's just instinct, you're racing. Coaching, the gun goes off, and now is when it starts. And so I'm running from one point to the next, yelling at athletes, pumping them up, making them feel good, yelling at them if I have to, getting on them, whatever it is, instructions, relax your shoulders, move your arms. Just little key words. But it's definitely a different feeling from an athlete to a coach. You're not in control. Once the gun goes off, you're not in control anymore. And you just have to have confidence that your athletes are well-trained.
Well, if you see a blur out there during the races, it's UCLA cross-country coach Forrest Braden. Thanks for joining us on Bruin Talk. Best of luck as the season winds down.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us again on UCLA Bruin Talk. Allison and I will be back next week with another great show. Until then, so long from Westwood.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.